The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Got Jim in the remote studio, but we got him all set up, even though he changed locations. Before we start with his questions, I do want to address one thing that came up in the last show, actually. Jim had a Social Security question that, honestly, I was so focused on answering the two questions that they posed in their email that I didn't pick up on one key element as Jim was reading it that a listener pointed out to me. Last time we had a question where we had somebody who was almost 70, his wife was collecting benefits, and he was asking about when he should go in to file if he was going to turn 70 here coming up in a few months. And I advised him about the, you know, claiming 3 months, you know, or putting in the application 3 months ahead of time is a good idea. I think he had another question. But as part of that, it was revealed that his birth year was 1951. Which makes sense, you know, if he's turning 70 this year in 2021. And so he is grandfathered into the ability of filing a restricted application for spousal benefits. And he didn't mention it, so he doesn't appear to be claiming them. And so the listener that pointed this out to me, I appreciate them giving me a heads up that should advise him, and I'll reach out to this person, make sure they need to run it in and file for spousal benefits only. That's still allowed when you're born before January 2nd of 1954. He could have this whole time, ever since his wife started claiming her own benefit, he could have been claiming a spousal benefit this whole time. Now, the good news is he can go in and file retroactively 6 months, so he'll be able to collect maybe 8 months or so worth of spousal benefits. And if I remember correctly, her benefit was around $1,400 a month or so. So he might be getting himself $700 a month. Spousal benefit for maybe 8 to 10 months, so an extra $5,000 to $7,000 in his pocket that he wasn't going to get if he didn't go in and do this. So just wanted to bring that up real quick that, yes, if you were born before 1954, January 2nd specifically, you can still deploy the restricted application technique where once you're full retirement age, you can file a spousal application only, leaving your own benefit to grow in the background to age 70. And then when you turn 70, you can switch to your own. We call it a form of getting paid to wait. So just wanted to share that real quick before Jim shares his first question. So sorry to hog the spotlight, Jim, but I wanted to make sure we got that added to last week's show.
No, that's very important. I'm glad you did that. And do you need that person's email so you can reach out to him, or do you already have
it? I do not. I have that, so we'll get it taken care of.
Okay, you already have it. Good. Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple of housekeeping items, folks. I am in the remote studio, as Chris likes to put it, but otherwise known as my house. But I'm actually in the closet of my house, the location that Chris wanted to first put me, mind you. Now I'm in it, and I'm in it, and I'm not sure if everything can hear me okay. So, Chris, you'll have to cue me in if
it's way better.
Okay. Good, because I'm
just
in the,
knowing you're in the closet.
I'm in the far reaches of my house, in the closet, and people might be saying, "Why aren't you in the sunroom, Jim? Why are you in the closet?" Well, my sunroom is full of all sorts of furniture and odds and ends and items that had to be hauled up from my basement when my water pipes burst. So yours truly has been having a string of incredibly bad luck between his stroke and now the AFib diagnosis and now burst water pipes in my basement that I didn't find for at least a day and a half after they burst. So all the furniture in the basement is up into the sunroom, not the man cave, into the sunroom, which is right above the basement, by the way. So there's no room for me there. And I have workers in the basement, even as we speak, ripping up the drywall, taking up the soaking carpet, getting it all thrown out. So you may occasionally hear banging and noise and things like that, way beyond my control. But that's why I'm in the closet trying to hide back here. And hopefully you won't hear any of that. But it's been a hell of a last 3 or 4 months for me there, Chris.
Yeah, you had a bit of good luck, you know. Your neighbor found you in time to save you. That was good luck.
So but that was all with the bad luck.
Don't
I was
ignore
having a
that part. Well, I know, but, you know, glass half full, glass half empty.
No, there is no glass half full when you're having a stroke. I'm sorry. Hey, I had a stroke, but I was found. So, I mean, granted, yes, I was found and miraculously healed. I still am floored with the fact that I'm talking and walking. But now I also have no basement. And anyways, it is what it is. I didn't even get angry, Chris, when I went down there and stepped into a mess the other day. It just, what do you do? I mean, I couldn't even get mad. Getting mad wasn't going to solve anything. But anyways, it is what it is. And you cannot get, Chris, a water restoration company. I mean, I was number 45 on the company's list. 45. They got 45 people ahead of me. And he said when he was on the phone with me, three other people were calling his phone. It's just nuts. I have no idea how long it's going to take to get them out here. But anyways, folks, that's what's going on. So I'll, we'll see how today's recording goes. I know we want to try to get 15, 16 questions answered, and Chris only has 40 minutes today. So we're going to try our hardest, but I bet we only get through 3 or 4. What do you think, Chris?
I think that's true.
Yeah, probably. Okay, well, we're going to start with a Social Security question, as we always do. We're probably going to do 2 Social Security questions because there's one that we got in that I think the woman just misunderstood you/us. But she doesn't tell us what show she was listening to. So I'll read you her question. I just think she misunderstood the gist. Okay. So she said, I have been catching up on some of your old podcasts. And there was an episode where a listener wanted to know how to voluntarily increase their Social Security withholding, to which Chris answered. Previously, before hearing this show, I had no idea that was even an option. But my question is this. Why would anyone want to voluntarily increase their Social Security withholding? I assume there's an expectation that such a move will increase your eventual benefit, but do you really know that for sure? After all, Social Security is pay-as-you-go, and we're talking about the federal government, not the most efficient when it comes having to do with anything with money. And then she says, stay well. She gives her real name. We're going to call her Georgette. And she is from Portland, Oregon, Chris. Mm-hmm. And I think
it was
voluntarily increased the taxes on your Social Security withholding. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's clear that she's thinking you can adjust how much you have withheld from your paycheck to pay Social Security taxes. That withholding is what she's talking about. That's not what we were referring to. We were referring to if you are collecting Social Security benefits, you can elect to have a certain amount withheld for eventual tax obligation. If you owe taxes in the years that you are paying Social Security, one option to withhold taxes so you don't have a late or a late payment penalty, or in time, you know, penalty for under withholding at the end of the year. You could increase your Social Security withholding from your benefit, not the withholding from a paycheck while working, to generate a Social Security benefit. That's what she's talking about. You have no discretion on that. That is legally what's done. You cannot, I guess, if you wanted to send in more, I can't imagine. Actually, the Social Security system probably couldn't even cash your check. They wouldn't even know what to do with it. But you can't elect to have more in to try to increase your benefits. You're going to get the benefit that you are calculated. And then when you're collecting the benefit, you can have nothing withheld. You could have 7% withheld, 10%, 12%, or 22%. That's the that show was talking about the fact that you can't just elect any random amount. You have to pick 0, 7, 10, 12, or 22% to be withheld and sent in for federal income taxes. So that's where the disconnect was. She was talking about the withholding on the front end when you're working, earning a paycheck, and they're withholding some of your paycheck to send in for what are called payroll taxes, so Social Security and Medicare taxes. That's not what we were talking about there.
That's what I thought, too. I thought she was just misunderstanding what you meant by withholding.
Yeah.
Okay, here's another Social Security question that I think you can answer fairly easily. So it begins, well, this is, gives his real name. We're going to call him George, as always, but does not say where he's from. Okay, so I have no idea where this George is from, but here's his question. Hi, guys. When I turned 66 last year, I tried to apply for Social Security. I had to call and finally got a hold of a person who then asked me if I want to apply for a spousal benefit instead. I said, are you sure I can do that? And they said, yes. Well, since then, I have been receiving half of my wife's of about $1,600. Now, I don't know, Chris, if he means half of his wife's is $1,600 or he's been receiving half of his wife's, which is $1,600, and he's getting $800.
No, he can't. $1,600 can't be the spousal benefit in 2021. That'd be too high.
Okay, so he's receiving half of $1,600, you think?
Must be, yeah.
Okay. But recently listening to your past shows, so people are going back and listening to the past shows, and do that, folks. If you're on iTunes or whatever podcast thing you have, look at some of the older shows. Or if you're on our website, you can look at past shows. So anyways, he was looking at past shows, and he says, but recently listening to some of your past shows, it sounded like I should not have been doing that since my own Social Security was $3,000. What should I do now? Should I contact them or not? Or should I just wait till I turn 70?
Well, this is a little bizarre because what he sounds like happened is he is collecting a spousal-only benefit. If his benefit was $3,000, he is now, under current rules, deemed to be filing for his own benefit before he's collecting any other benefits, including a spousal benefit. This is unlike the when I opened the show and I talked about the call from or the email from last week, where they were born in 1951, and I pointed out he could file a restricted application just for spousal benefits. This person, if they turn 66 in 2020, unless they turn 66 on January 1st of 2020, which would mean he was born January 1st of 1954, that's the only day in 1954 you could be born and still file a restricted application here in 2020, in when he did it last year. So I think there's a mistake. I think they allowed him to file a restricted application somehow and shouldn't have. He shouldn't be able to collect just a spousal benefit, leaving his own unclaimed. The fact that his own benefit is $3,000 and he's collecting less than that means he's not collecting his own benefit, which is bizarre, unless the $3,000, well, either way, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think we're going to have to reach out to him and get a little more clarity on what's going on, because it sounds like a situation, he's described a situation that I don't believe should exist. Someone born after January 1st of 1954, who seems to be collecting just a spousal, leaving their own $3,000 benefit unclaimed. That's not supposed to happen under current rules. So
I agree. And what I thought when I read, when I read this, and then I found it odd you led with what you were leading with. I had no idea, folks, Chris was going to lead with that. Again, as we said before on the podcast, we don't script this. We just kind of come in and chat. And we're not even in the same building right now. I think he might have been born January 1st. What do you think? 1954.
That's the one way he would squeak in under the rules, and then this would make perfect sense, that he's collecting a spousal only, waiting for his benefit to maximize at 70. Sounds like he kind of got suggested into it, whether he intended to do this or really wants to do this or not. The good news is he could go in and change. He's not locked into waiting. He could turn on his own benefit at any time. But he's kind of dropped into, and I'm surprised they recommended this without him asking for it outright, but he kind of found himself in the old strategy of claim a restricted spousal benefit alone, leaving your own unclaimed, letting it grow to maximum at age 70 while you're still collecting that spousal in the background. That was a very popular technique. Not allowed for people born after January 1st of 1954. So maybe that's the explanation. Maybe it just so happened he turned 66 on the first day of 2020, and I don't know. That's what I'm saying. We need to reach out to him and see if that's what it is. If that's what it is, then this makes perfect sense. If not, then we have some investigation to do, because I don't think he should be allowed to do what he seems to be doing if he was born after the 1st of January.
Okay. That's what I thought. He was just born on January 1st and he didn't say. Mm-hmm. If not, clearly some mistake was made or something, which brings a question that I want to ask you for clarification. I always thought Social Security reps were barred from strategizing and giving advice. And it sounds to me like he was given advice. What is your take?
No, they can ask you what you want to do and tell you what the options are. They are allowed to do that. So they're not, when you say not give advice, it's true. They can't go out of their way to strategize for you or to lay out, hey, if you did this, this is what would happen. And if you did this, they can answer your questions. Then if you ask them you go in there and they're looking in your system and they will look at all the menu of benefits to which you're eligible, you know, to which you're entitled if you claim. They'll just read them off. You know, would you like to do this? Would you like to do that? You know, that kind of thing. They're totally allowed to do that. So if that's all that happened, I don't think any lines were crossed in that regard. But if they had a deep conversation and they weighed the pros and cons and all this kind of stuff, that's going above and beyond and shouldn't have been allowed. They're coached not to do that because they're legally not supposed to do that kind of advice giving. But telling him the menu of options he has to choose from, and then he chose he said, well, would you like to file for a spousal benefit only? And he says, yes. Yeah. System should have kicked it out. Not sure why it didn't, but maybe he was born on the 1st of January, and it's all good.
Okay, well, that wraps up the two Social Security questions we got this week, folks. If you have any more Social Security questions, we like to lead with Social Security. I don't know why we started doing it, but we started doing it that way for a while now, hasn't it been, Chris?
I think it's because we had a big backlog of them, and so we always wanted to chip away at that backlog, so we always wanted to hit a couple of those before we moved on with other stuff, but now the backlog is kind of caught up on Social Security, so we don't have to adhere to this convention
anymore.
That's
right. And that was before you found all those Social Security questions I had, took them, left the paperclip, took the questions, And
right.
then we didn't
that's
have
That's how
anymore.
I dealt
Remember
with
that?
The queue. Yeah, that's just, the backlog is gone because I threw it away.
Because you threw all those away. Yeah. I mean, it certainly wasn't me who lost
them. Or fed them to the mouse.
Well, the mouse doesn't eat much. It hasn't been eating much for a couple of
years. It took
him
a while to get through the pile.
Okay, for those who don't know, we have a pet dead mouse in my recording studio. But I don't think he eats that much. Okay, the next question is unique. And personally, I'm going to give an answer. And I want you to opine and give your answer as well. And then I sent the question to the Ed Slott group. And I politely disagree with their answer. Mm. So I'm going to let everybody decide and make their own answer. How's that?
Okay.
But this is a very, very unique question. Okay. Hi. Let's see. Where is he from, first of all? Oh, they are they're from Virginia. And soon they're going to be moving to North Carolina.
Don't you remember that show, The Virginians?
But that's not how they spelt it. Virginia. See, they put an extra I in there.
No, that's how it's spelled.
It's just Virginians?
Yeah.
It's not Virginians?
It's kind of like Indians. Has an IA.
Indians, Virginians. All right. Well, hell, that's a lot easier. All right. Well,
there you go. You nailed it.
They're Virginians. I was trying to put the IANS. I was trying to pronounce that.
A couple times.
Who came up with the English language?
I don't know. He's crazy.
That guy should be taken out and shot. All right. Anyways, they are Virginian. They're from Virginia and soon to be North Carolina. Is it Carolinians or Carolinians?
I would say Carolinians, but I think you can do it either way.
All right. Well, they're moving to North Carolina, and they're from Virginia.
Perfect.
And they signed their name George and Georgette, so they know the game here. We always protect their anonymity. Okay, begins. Hi, Jim, Chris, and Bob. Hmm. In listening to your podcast, Q&A 2107.
Oh, that was just last week.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You answered a listener's question about a distribution he took due to a medical condition. Oh, I remember that. I remember that. Mm-hmm. That was last week. Mm-hmm. During the answer, which some people may have found verbiose, I think he meant we went on and on, right?
Yes.
Okay. You discussed the ability to restore his coronavirus-related distribution from a traditional IRA into a Roth IRA. You said that although it doesn't meet the spirit of the law, it's perfectly legal.
I don't know if you said perfectly legal, but it's not barred. It's not mentioned
True.
That you can't do it.
Thank you for picking up on that. The IRS has not given, we prefer to say in the industry, we have no guidance from the IRS on if they will allow it or not. And it's not directly addressed in the law. So I wouldn't say perfectly legal. It's until they tell us otherwise, it's allowed. Or it could be allowed. Depends on how the IRS views it.
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, now that I started chatting, I lost the spot where I was. Okay. This has led us to think about our situation. During the market tailspin in March of 2020, I converted $50,000 from my traditional IRA to my Roth IRA. So follow that so far, Chris. Mm-hmm. Last year, around this time last year, well, not this time, almost this time, March of 2020. Remember when the market was tanking 38% in 6 weeks? People were panicking. Mm-hmm. He converted 50 grand from his IRA to his Roth. Now, if his timing was good, if he did it when the market was down 38%, that was a smart conversion because he got $50,000 in that maybe a few weeks earlier was worth $75,000. And when the market recovered, all that money would have grown tax-free. Mm-hmm. Follow me so far?
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In early December, I myself caught COVID-19, thus qualifying me for a CRD. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then he gets into a little bit about my stroke. I want to skip that, so give me one second, folks. I'm skipping this in my mind. I don't want to keep hounding on my stroke. Okay, so my question is, can we now claim the income from that conversion over the next 3 years?
Tricky.
The conversion pushed our AGI from 154 to just over 204. Remember, $50,000, Chris.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it heavily reduced the amount of stimulus payments we were entitled to. We had also converted a large amount in 2019, which pushed our AGI far too high to qualify under that rule. Because remember, it's how much you earned in 2019 or what you earned in 2020 that would allow if you could get the stimulus check. Because of these two conversions, he kind of converted his way out of getting the stimulus checks. Follow me?
Yes.
Okay. We never touched the proceeds as it went directly from my custodian IRA to Roth IRA. So he did a direct rollover slash conversion. Went from his IRA to his Roth IRA. He never touched it. We hope you continue to make great strides in your progress with your stroke and keep finding those little rabbit holes and run down them. Well, that's no problem. I will find a rabbit hole and run down them. So I knew what my answer was, and I still stand by my answer. But I also sent this question to the Ed Slott group, and I got their reply, which surprised me, and I disagree with it. But before I get to my thoughts and Ed Slott's group's thoughts, what are your thoughts, Chris? Can he take the $50,000 of taxable income that he's going to have? He did a direct conversion, trustee-to-trustee conversion. Can he spread that out over 3 years, which would be, as you know, a third, a third, a third?
I vote no. And the reasoning is it wasn't a distribution. That's called a coronavirus-related distribution for a reason. You took it as a distribution. Then they gave you rules about how you could put it back, essentially extending the 60-day rollover concept. This was a direct rollover. No distribution ever happened. I think they're going to look very unkindly at someone who tries to do what they're proposing, is my opinion. So I don't think, could they get away with it? Maybe. I don't think that if it was scrutinized, that would hold up. That's my opinion.
Your opinion and my opinion are the same. And it's probably because you learn from me and listen, just like I learned from you on Social Security. You've heard me say this repeatedly. My opinion is there was no distribution. It was a
conversion. I haven't heard you talk about this specifically.
But, we talked about this once already. I do remember. I remember talking about this on another question.
I have a horrible
memory, while ago, so. Sometime last year.
Well, so maybe there's a little voice in my mind recalling that. But that was my original reaction was no distributions happen. There is no CRD.
Exactly, listeners. The D in CRD stands for coronavirus-related distribution. If he would have done this conversion, in my opinion, folks, as a 60-day rollover conversion, which, Chris, is that allowed?
Yes.
Absolutely. And just for those who don't know, if you took your money out of your IRA, a 60-day rollover conversion is you take the money as a cash distribution to you. That's what it is. It's a cash distribution. Satisfies the D, Chris, in QCD.
CRD.
CRD. CRD. CRD. Don't stop pressing that beeper thing. I will get it. CRD. The D stands for distribution. If he did it as a 60-day rollover, folks, he takes a distribution from his IRA, and he's got 60 days to do what he wants with it, and he can put it back into an IRA or a Roth IRA. If he puts it into the Roth, it's a conversion. If he puts it into a regular IRA, it is a rollover. And a little fun fact, we'll get into this deeper again on other shows, but we've talked about this repeatedly. Just a little fun fact, Chris. He took, let's just say he took the distribution. If he was going to do this as a 60-day rollover, which he didn't, but let's pretend he did. Here's that little rabbit hole I'm going down. Let's say he took the distribution on March 20th and he put it into the Roth account on April 20th. What day did the conversion happen?
The day he took it out, March
20th. March 20th. Yep. Even though he didn't put it into the Roth, folks, the IRS considers the conversion to happen the day he took the distribution. He could have kept that money out and never put it back. He could have put it into an IRA within 60 days. He could have put it into a Roth within 60 days. It does not matter when the money goes into the Roth. The conversion happens on the day he took the money out of the IRA. Just one of those little bizarre fun facts, which comes in very handy, Chris, towards the end of the year for a little tax planning strategy you and I like to opine about, and we'll do that in the fall again. But anyways, I digress. So in my opinion, Chris, he qualifies for a QCD. Absolutely. It does not matter... Wait, he doesn't. What do you mean he doesn't qualify? What
he does qualifies too qualify. For CRD. Yeah.
Say what?
You said QCD again.
Ah, did I?
I'm going to train you out of it with the buzzer.
Seriously, I said QCD.
You did.
Oh goodness. He qualifies, folks, for a Q... Now you got it in my head. It's like I'm going to start calling every. I'm going to call him Kelly. He qualified for a Kelly. How's that?
Okay.
He qualified for a CRD, folks. It does not matter that he got diagnosed with COVID after he took the $50,000.
Yeah, they didn't play the game of timing. Yeah, they didn't want you to have to prove timing, so they just made it a non-issue.
Correct. As long as he was impacted by COVID in 2020, he qualifies no matter when the money came out. So there's no disputing, Chris, he qualified for a CRD. The dispute in my mind is, can he treat a direct trustee to trustee transfer into a Roth as a CRD? I don't feel it does because there was no D. There was no technically no distribution. The law was passed, Chris, for people who needed money. You needed to distribute that money to you so you could spend it because you're being impacted by COVID. And then they're going to give you up to 3 years to get the money back in and up to 3 years to pay the taxes. They didn't say, hey, if you got COVID, you got this beautiful window for doing mega conversions and spreading the taxes out. Mm-hmm. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. So
I'm baffled by the Ed Slott response then. Because...
Well, I'm going to read their answer verbatim in a second. So my opinion, listeners, he qualifies for a CRD. I don't think the direct trustee-to-trustee conversion qualifies as a distribution, negating the D in the CRD. And Chris also took that approach, and he had no idea I was going to say this, so he and I are seeing eye to eye. Let me read the Slott opinion, okay? Mm-hmm. Jim, we have consistently said... using CRD rules for a Roth conversion is against the spirit of the law. However, IRS has had plenty of time and opportunity to clarify the rules or to outright close this loophole. Yet for whatever reason, they have remained silent on this matter. We also stand by the idea that a direct conversion would not count as a CRD, but this is not officially outlined anywhere in the law. So the Slott group is saying what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it would qualify, but they're saying nowhere in the law does it specify that. So they're getting a little bit into the minutia. See what they're mm-hmm. saying? Mm-hmm. They kind of agree with us, but they're saying there's no guidance. Your listener will still receive a 1099-R from the distributing IRA. And if he qualifies as an affected individual with COVID, which we all agree he does, he could label that distribution / conversion as a CRD via Form 8915-E. That's going to be the form that you're declaring CRDs, by the way, folks. This would allow him to spread the income over 3 years. However, for disclaimer purposes,
yeah, this is key right here.
The IRS could come back against this listener and retroactively disqualify the CRD. And if that is to happen, he will be forced to pay all the taxes in 1 year, and he will not be allowed to spread them out.
Right.
What they're saying is they agree with us, Chris, essentially. Mm-hmm. The direct conversion does not qualify for a CRD, but there's nothing in the law that prevents it. I think there is. The D stands mm-hmm. for distribution.
Yeah. They're saying their explanation is go ahead and fill it out as if it was a distribution. They're not going to know any better, but, and then they're covering their butt with the disclaimer, the IRS could come back and disallow it. And I think the chances of that are high if it's scrutinized. There's lots of things that happen in people's taxes that, not that we or anyone else would encourage them to do, but it could be even just a mistake that just flies because they never get caught and just never gets picked up for whatever reason. Could something like this go through without getting scrutinized? Possibly. I wouldn't propose doing that because I think this is beyond counter to the intent of the law. This isn't, oh, I took it out, I took an actual distribution, and then I decided to, I really, turns out I didn't need it, and I decided I may as well put it back in a Roth and split it out over 3 years. So that is a much softer bending of the rules, I think, than, well, I didn't take a distribution at all, but I'm going to call it a distribution on this form and hope you don't catch me. That's kind of what they're alluding to there. Not that I'm going to accuse the slot group of encouraging people to do the wrong thing, but they're admitting
they're
something
taking
is
the
true.
Letter of yeah. the law, and they are correct. There is nothing in the law that says you can't do it, but I kind of disagree. The D stands for distribution. They're telling you it's got to be a distribution. By their own admission in their answer to me, they don't think he qualifies. That was the first sentence that I read to you folks. They don't think he qualifies, but they're saying there's nothing in the law that right now disallows this. It just goes against the spirit of the law. Chris and I disagree. I think the D in CRD says it all, Chris, and this is clearly not a distribution. And listener, we're not telling you one way or another what you should do. I'm just giving you answers from the slot group, which I admire immensely and are far smarter than I'll ever be, plus Chris and I's answer. And we do pride ourselves in our knowledge and understanding. And it's not that the slot group and I disagree. We both don't feel this qualifies as a CRD. I feel you should not declare it as a CRD. The slot group says you may want to consider. They're not telling you to do it or not. They're saying there's nothing in the law that says you can't. But in their opinion, it will not qualify. But there's nothing in the law saying the direct conversion won't qualify. And for you to decide, and they're essentially saying the worst thing that can happen and be prepared for it, they disqualify it. They force you to pay taxes all in 1 year. So you're going to have to file an amended return. You'll probably have to pay some penalty taxes for the underpayment of taxable income.
Yeah, because they're not going to catch it real time. They're going to catch it a couple right. of years from now. And then you're
years later. Yeah. Exactly. A couple of years later. And don't forget, listener. Well, I don't think this would have been fixed I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get into how the tax return, what is it, a 5398, I think it is, or 50, whatever that form is. I think it's 5398 for reporting a penalty on a distribution requires its own signature. So there's no statute of limitations. I don't think that really applies here. So we're not going to go down that little rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, listeners, they have at least 3 years to be able to figure this out. But I also want to point out something, Chris. If the listener is thinking, well, how the heck's the IRS ever going to know? They get a 1099, I agree, on that distribution, 1099-R, on the conversion. But they're also going to get a 5498 from the receiving custodian showing $50,000 going in. So they're going to see $50,000 coming out and $50,000 going right back in. Is their computer system, Chris, smart enough to put two and two together? That I don't know. But remember, the distributing custodian, which I think is the same. So let's just say you're a Vanguardian. Vanguard's going to send you a 1099-R from the IRA on the conversion. And a 5498 goes to the IRS showing $50,000 being put into your Roth. So the IRS will have the information. Whether or not they're going to be able to put two and two together, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was interesting. I was surprised that they said, they did not say this listener should do it or can do it. They just simply said there's no guidance and they could theoretically argue and do it. If they were my client, I would probably be encouraging them not to do it. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're pushing it a little too far. Plus, I don't think the benefit is substantial enough to be quite this aggressive, my personal opinion. Yes, it's
well, he would
stimulus
be able
money,
to spread the taxes out, and he'd be able to qualify for some of the stimulus payments. So he can possibly save some money and, of course, get some stimulus. Mm-hmm. But it blowing up in your face will probably cost more in taxes and penalty than you might get from trying this.
Right.
So weigh the two, roll the dice, and go for it if that's what your decision is, or take the more prudent approach and don't do it.
Yep.
But there's nothing saying you can't, and there's certainly nothing saying you can. Decision is going to be yours, listener, and every other listener who is in this same boat. Decision is yours.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this show. It's going to have to be a short
show.
Wow,
that's quick. Well, yep. Before we wrap up real quick, I want to read a few more book recommendations. We got so many. I want to just read a couple more.
Very quickly.
Thanks, folks, for those of you who sent in book recommendations. So I'll mention two more. Control Your Retirement Destiny by Dana. Well, actually, I think they already mentioned that one in a prior one. And How to Make Your Money Last by Jane Bryant Quinn. So again, this is for a young 30-something-year-old listener who wanted some good books on retirement and planning. So Make Your Money Last by Jane Bryant Quinn. I've got plenty more to read, and we'll get to those. And I know you want to wrap up, Chris, but I do want to make one quick mention, folks. I do want to thank everyone who has reached out to me in regard to an email that where someone thought I was annoying because I took a long time to answer questions and I got really deep into it, into the answers. And I mentioned that on a previous podcast. Many of you reached out to me to tell me to keep doing it the way I'm doing, and I appreciate that. But I want everyone to know, the gentleman who sent that original email, and I'm not going to read his reply back, did reach out to me in what I think was a very, very sincere apology. And he explained at length why he wrote what he did and how he realizes it probably he shouldn't have said it, and encouraging me not to change and apologizing. And I truly feel, folks, he was being very sincere and I didn't put him up to it. And I'm not going to read his email on here because I don't want it to sound like I'm patting myself on the back with self-congratulations. But I do want all the listeners to know he did reach out after hearing He talked about it on the podcast and has apologized. So I did want to share that. And I don't think you knew that yet either, Chris. Just wanted to let you know he did reach out and apologize. And for that, I was very grateful. And I do appreciate everyone else who has also reached out.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that brings us to the end of a little shorter than normal Q&A show. We'll be back next week with another one. We got plenty of questions to deal with. If you want to send in your own question, go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. You can learn more about us, and there's a contact form there. You can also just send Jim the questions directly, jim@jimhelps.com. And everyone have a nice weekend if you listen to this on the weekend, although there's always a weekend coming up. So any day of the week, I can wish you a good weekend, right? But we really appreciate you listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.